Thank you for coming this afternoon. My name is Matt Stinchfield from Plowshare Brewing in Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm also the chair of the brewery, the Brewers Association Safety Subcommittee. And while I've got your attention, I thought I'd just give a shout out to those members of the subcommittee who might be in the room today. Could we see a show of hands if you're in the Safety Subcommittee? That's great. I think we've got four or five of us in here today. And I'll remind you, if you don't know already from the program, that tomorrow in room 210, from 11:30 to 1:30, the safety subcommittees are hosting an open house. There will be beer. There will be free safety advice. Sort of like that, as long as you're talking to your lawyer at the bar kind of thing, he's not liable for what he says. But we've got some really great safety minds on the safety subcommittee, and most of them are here at the show this week and will be present tomorrow from 11:30 to 1:30 in room 210. So please come on by, bring your safety questions. You can remain anonymous. And we're also the people that produce the safety exchange on the Brewers Association forum. If you happen to read on Tuesdays, generally Tuesdays, I think it's Thursday this week because of the CBC, but we field questions from the BA greater membership on subjects of safety, and then we dole them out to our committee members, and we try to give you a good, concise answer to those questions. And so if you're not following the safety exchange on Tuesdays on the BA forum, please do. With that, I'll just say I'm about to introduce our speaker. If we've got time for questions at the end, and Joe is encouraging your questions, remember to step up to the mic because we're having an audio tape made today that you can download onto your mobile device later and hear it all once again if there's something you missed. So let me tell you a little bit about Joe Schiraldi here. He's the vice president of brewing operations from Left Hand Brewing. He's been there since 1994, and the story goes that he's a New Englander, and he came out here to play in a rock and roll band. And he's also a skier and a fly fisherman, incidentally. But, you got to pay the bills, and so he ended up as a delivery guy for Left Hand Brewing. And now, 20 years on, he's the VP of operations. He's had just about every job in the brewery, including packaging, brewing, cellar work, distribution even. With that, I'll tell you that Joe's going to give you a really interesting talk today that you can directly implement in your own breweries on hazard communication, orientation, and programs. So with that, let's give Joe a nice warm welcome.
All right. Can you all hear me all right? We got this? Okay. Welcome to you all. Thank you, Matt. Of course, a very interesting talk about HAZCOM, spoken like a true safety professional, of course. So today what we're going to talk about is HAZCOM specifically. I'm going to bring you through, for the majority of the time, through our HAZCOM program that we use for our new employees. So hopefully when you come out of here, you are able to do this back at your breweries. And I'd like to start also by saying thank you for being here. 2:40 in the afternoon, a discussion about HAZCOM can certainly make a presenter a little nervous about who's going to be here. So I wanted to say thank you and congratulations for taking an active role in the safety of your employees, the safety of your business, and of course preserving and our industry. And this is very important towards doing that. The first thing I'd like to do, since you get to ask questions at the end, I want to ask a question at the beginning. Show of hands, how many people saw Dirk's presentation? Good, okay. So 2 solid hours of safety for you guys, great. We're going to take it again a step further. We're going to get very specific, and we're going to talk about hazard communication with your new employees. This photo here obviously is there for the obvious reason, like that guy's kind of living on the edge right now. And also, I think it kind of exemplifies where a lot of us are in our daily lives. We have our hands and leg in all different kinds of things. And hopefully you'll see how this program can make your life easier in the long run. And so, boom, oh good, it's working. Okay, so why is HAZCOM program vital? First of all, with very few exceptions, you're required by law to comply with this. Small family farms are exempt, etc. So a very obvious reason why we're talking about this today. Also, organizations, both large and small, rely on their employees to do their jobs. If your employee is on a work restriction and is unable to go to work, is home watching soap operas, or, who's covering their job? In many instances, it's you who are covering their job. And then the question remains, who's doing yours now? HAZCOM allows your employees to be proactive and engaged in their own safety. So many people say, oh, it's another bureaucratic thing that many of us have a disdain for bureaucracy by virtue of who we are, craft brewers. But the personal responsibility and accountability should align with your point of view. So this is enabling your employees to be proactive and engaged in their safety. Another, being a master of the obvious that I am, you're probably a good person, and you want your team members to be safe and be able to return to their families at the end of their shift. I don't know if you've had the painful experience of having to make that phone call. You know, Frankie is in the hospital. He won't be home for dinner tonight. I have, and it certainly is not the kind of thing that you like to do. And I put in red there, establishes a culture of safety early, and this is probably one of the biggest advantages right off to presenting HAZCOM the first day that you have a new employee on, because it sends a signal that safety is important to us. We have procedures, we have rules, and we want to make sure that, you know, you are compliant with that. And it starts from day one. There's nothing harder than changing a behavior. I've had to do that too. Having been at Left Hand for as long as I have been, I assure you, in 1994, we did not have any kind of a safety program. We certainly do now. And to try to get that to, you know, be matriculated and accepted by, you know, 50 employees all of a sudden could be very challenging and very difficult. So it sets the standard very early. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the culture of safety. Yeah, it's a great one, huh? It's amazing what you can find out there. Establishing this culture is the biggest challenge, and it's also the best guarantee of your success. A ground-up program, something where your employees are the ones that are driving the program, are engaged in the program, is the easiest one to implement and the easiest one to continue successfully. Your rules and your program will count for very little if they don't get off the paper. If you don't lead it, and that means through demonstration, being compliant yourself with the rules, if you don't enforce it, and in those instances where you have to, if you don't document it, it's going to be very, very difficult to make it effective. So it's important that you do these things right from the beginning. Again, it sets a standard by which your employees understand what's important, what their expectations are, and you're off and running. Okay. Adherence to a safety standard separates the pros from the amateurs. That's my perception of it. Many of us who are now professional brewers started as amateur brewers, and this is, you know, among the many things that separate amateurs from professionals, but one in the context of what we're talking about right now, safety, doing it safely. We present HAZCOM on an employee's first day on the job before I let them on the production floor. Everybody, salesmen from Timbuktu, marketing people, everybody that works here has to know what the hazards are in our brewery. And so we make sure they see that before they're allowed on the floor for any further training or anything like that, among other things. So now we're going to get right to the meat and potatoes of the presentation here. This is an abridged version, albeit, of our hazard communication program. I say abridged because some things I don't go into great detail on. Normally, for example, we would go through an entire MSDS or SDS. We're not going to do that, but I'm going to just touch upon that briefly. So, and then of course you can insert your name there, your brewery, because that's not the name of our brewery. Okay, so the first thing that we need to do is talk about, we're going to talk about what is HAZCOM. This is where we're going to talk about why are we sitting together at this table? What are we talking about? And that basically explains how the information gets to the user. Hazard communication is a section of the Occupational Safety and Health Act that requires chemical manufacturers and importers to determine the hazards of the substances they are producing, communicate those hazards to their customers. That would be me or the person that's doing the ordering. Employers provide training and communicate those hazards to the employees or the end users and provide protection from these hazards. And employees to understand the hazards of the chemicals they may be exposed to and follow all safety requirements in regards to those hazards. So, and you can find them all in 29 CFR 1910.1200. And that is, as Dirk said, a very interesting read. And you should absolutely have that and look through it. It's really not that difficult. It's not as bad as it might seem. Okay, so again, touching upon it further, what is HAZCOM? We're to say it simply, which is something that you really want to do with your program. You're going to have all different kinds of people that you're going to put this through. We put everybody through our program, from myself, vice presidents, other upper managers, to guys working on the bottling line, to truck drivers, whoever it may be. So you need to kind of make sure that you're getting the point across, and to make it overly difficult is just an obstacle to that. So, to say it simply, and that'll be a theme that'll run throughout our program, you have the right to know the chemical hazards you are exposed to. You also have an obligation to obey all safety requirements and minimize those hazards. And your company has an obligation to provide you with that knowledge and to act to minimize those hazards. So kind of again saying it more simply and reiterating the theme. So why does HAZCOM matter? This is also one of the things you're required to have in your program. Why are we all doing this? Well, hazardous substances are used in all of the following facets of brewery operations. Grain handling, CIP, SIP, brewing, fermentation, transferring, and on and on and on, all the way down to vehicle maintenance. Have I missed anything? Because if I did, it needs to be on the list. Everything we do has a hazard associated with it. Brewing is dangerous work by nature. So this helps the employee to understand, why are we talking about this? Because what we do is dangerous, and we're trying to make this easier for you to be proactive in your safety. Why does HAZCOM matter? Again, reiteration. Hazardous substances are used in all the following facets of brewery operations, almost everything we do. And of course, nice picture. This is the classic baby glass tabletop, and of course, up into a certain age, that child will walk right out across that glass tabletop, not knowing of the impending hazard that would be below him. So HAZCOM training overview. This is what we're going to talk about in our program. This is what your program is going to address. We're going to talk about how we communicate hazards to the employee. We're going to talk about what hazards are present. How do we protect ourselves from those hazards? And how do we detect the release or presence of hazardous chemicals in the workplace? So these are all the tools that we're going to give our employees to be able to take care of themselves and their coworkers. Excuse me. Okay, so first thing we're going to talk about here, how do we communicate the hazards? Well, the first thing is through MSDSs, which are now converting to an SDS, much superior system. Again, for those that perhaps did not see Dirk's presentation, one of the best advantages of the GHS or Global Harmonized System is the consistency of the formatting for the SDS. So they used to be very, very haphazard. All the same kind of information, but in different orders, perhaps a little variation in how they're presenting it. Now it's very standardized, so you know what to expect. We also communicate hazards through the labeling of primary and secondary containers. I, for one, that's probably a very big challenge, especially with those secondary containers. How often do you go out and someone, obviously doesn't want to have to walk all the way back to the main dispense station, so you have a point-of-use container that has absolutely nothing on it. Tells nobody what's in that at all. So very important. So the labeling of primary and secondary containers and through employee training, and then, of course, signage and placards. Again, on the theme, how do we communicate hazards? MSDSs and SDSs. An MSDS is an SDS. OSHA has updated the regulations to require compliance with the globally harmonized standard. Similar information, different and consistent format. OSHA has required that all MSDSs be compliant by June of 2015. That means your suppliers have to make sure that all of their MSDSs have been converted to SDSs. Our requirement to update our training has already come and gone. It was December 1st, 2013. So how do we communicate hazards? Again, that same theme. These are the four things that we're talking about. One is how do we communicate hazards? Well, an SDS has 16 sections defined by OSHA. They are identification of the chemical, a hazards identification, composition and information on ingredients, very important. If you do ever have an injury, by the way, and someone has to go to the hospital or emergency room, send the SDS with the employee so that the doctor, if you say, he had got Lorapure 283 in his eye, the doctor is going to be like, what's that? But if he looks at it and he says, oh, it's sodium hydroxide, that helps him with his treatment. So by all means, please send that SDS with that for that reason right there. It tells the medical response team what it is they're really dealing with. First aid measures associated with the chemical, firefighting measures, accidental release measures, handling and cleanup, exposure controls, personal protection required, physical and chemical properties, its stability, reactivity, toxicological information, ecological information, disposal considerations, transport information, regulatory information, and then an open section, other information including date of preparation and its last revision. So a lot of stuff there, very extensive document, but now again, standardized. So much easier to use, and you know what to expect when you see it. Like, how do we communicate hazards? Here's an SDS. I got this from Dirk. He was one of the first guys of my suppliers that actually was starting to convert his MSDSs to SDSs. And I needed one because it was already December 3rd, and I needed to make sure I had my employee training updated. So we were able to get a sheet from Dirk. So at this point, you would actually review an SDS for a chemical we use every day at the brewery. And I would absolutely choose one that is very, very common. The caustic you use for CIP or your sanitizer if you're using PAA, something that they would be using on a daily basis that also has a pretty high level of risk associated with it. So what you would do, and this is kind of where I started to cut some things out, I have every page in my presentation so we can go through this and I can go with the employee step by step through each section and explain to them, this is how you access the information you need in order to do this safely. This is what the goal is here, to make sure that they have the information they need. So you'd pick one of the most common chemical hazards, go through each section, and highlight the kinds of information and where employees can find it. Very important. How do they access the information? Oh, my goodness, and there it is. How do we communicate hazards? Our complete list of all hazardous substances that are used in the workplace, along with SDSs, MSDS sheets, are available electronically at all files, left-hand brewing server, MSDS, right there, front page, you get there, you have all your different folders that have your production files, your sales files, everything. We have a separate MSDS right there, first page, very easy to get to. So we tell them, this is where you can, one spot you can go to get to it. Also, individual SDS and MSDS sheets for specific areas may also be found in the binders located on or near our first aid kits. So also at the point of use, much closer. They don't have to run upstairs, get to a laptop, and get on there, although they can. How do we communicate hazards? We use it through the labeling of primary and secondary containers. All primary containers must have the manufacturer's label or be rejected at the dock. That's our policy. If we don't know what it is that's coming in, we're probably going to make a phone call and get the label on there before we accept it. But in essence, what that says to my employees is, if you can't get the label on there, it can't come in our facility, period. Missing, damaged, illegible labels must be reported to a supervisor immediately. So making sure, again, closing that communication loop, making sure that we get the things that the employee needs as part of the employer's commitment. Secondary containers must be labeled with at least the name of the chemical, and the original label and MSDS must be available. So much less stringent labeling requirements for secondary use, but extremely important. Again, and I know you guys see it at your breweries. It happens. A container's out there, it's hiding behind a tank. People are grabbing that sanitizer and using it, or that that manual cleaner and using it, and people need to know what it is, what's in there. And so that's very, very important, and that's probably one that's one of the more challenging to make sure that you have to enforce. So we also, through the labels, again, this is a GHS compliant label, again, standardized, and so you have a product identifier as number one, A signal word, number two, danger, which is severe, or warning, which is slightly less severe, are the two that they use. Highly flammable liquid, number three is a hazard statement. Highly flammable liquid and vapor causes serious eye damage, et cetera, et cetera. Four is a precautionary statement, treatment statement, keep away from heat and sparks, things of that nature. Five is the supplier identification, good to have if you need some additional information. And then, of course, the pictograms, which are graphical symbols intended to convey specific hazard information visually. So why is this? Well, we have a wide range of employees again, and this is applicable not just to brewing but to all industry. And perhaps you have seasonal workers, perhaps you have something, perhaps it's English is not their primary language. Whatever it is, we have all different education levels. This puts it in a very simple way for people to understand. You can see the flames. We all know what that means, don't we? You can see the hand with the big burn spot, and we know what that means. There you are, GHS compliant label. That would be on the primary containers. And then, of course, the secondary container has a much less stringent requirement. This is a list of all the different pictograms that you'll see out there, the health hazard, the flame, the exclamation mark, gas cylinder, corrosion hazards, exploding bombs, flame over circle, oxidizers, environment, which is non-mandatory because aquatic toxicity, et cetera, it's just the fish. Who cares, right? Yeah. Pardon the sarcasm. Yeah, I think that's ridiculous. But skull and crossbones, acute toxicity, if it's fatal or toxic. So, again, these are the things that make it so if you can't read difficult words, it keeps people informed. What are the hazards in our workplace? So now we're going to talk a little more specifically about left hand, what we have here, and what they need to know about as a hazard. So caustic chemicals, we probably, I'm sure, all have those. And what are the hazards? Well, it has a high pH. It's corrosive to the skin, eyes, and mucous membranes. Mists are dangerous to the respiratory tract. Ingestion is harmful or fatal. Reactive with soft metals, aluminum, zinc, etc., as well as acids and oxidizers, so it can have a violent reaction. And then what you would do, and this is just a throw-in, we actually have a list of all the caustic chemicals in our facility. But you would give examples of what you have in yours. They're not going to be the same. They're all site-specific. So how do we protect ourselves from those hazards, those caustic chemicals? Corrosives PPE at full strength, and again, this is our policy, which is compliant with what would be on your SDS. Full strength, safety glasses, and a face shield, rubber apron, boots, and brewer's gloves are required. In solution, we just require the safety glasses, the boots, and the brewer's gloves. In terms of the reactivity hazard, proper storage is critical. On a drip tray, so you don't have chemicals spilling out across the floor, separated from the acids, etc., and oxidizers, so safe and safe hazard, safe storage. And in a proper container, either plastic or stainless steel, something that's designed to hold something like that. Half-gallon growlers are not safe, obviously, because if it drops and breaks, you have a half-gallon of chemicals out on the floor. So again, what are the hazards in our workplace? Chlorinated chemicals. Contact with acids, iron, copper, ammonium compounds, and other compounds can produce chlorine gas, which may be fatal. And again, present the list of examples in your brewery. So they have the list. We have these chlorinated chemicals. Boom, boom, boom. How do we protect ourselves from these hazards? Chlorinated chemicals, PPE, full strength. You see a theme here, very similar to what we saw with the caustic chemicals, proper storage, away from acids and oxidizers, process controls, never mix with any acid or oxidizer. What are the hazards in our workplace? Acids, low pH, corrosive to skin, eyes, mucous membranes. Again, very similar to some of the other ones we see. And once again, you would present a list of all the acids you have in your brewery. How do we protect ourselves? Again, with our regime of PPE, reactivity in terms of how it relates to storage and use of proper containers. We also have oxidizers. Oxidizers can react violently with organics, metals, and particulate to produce oxygen and can lead to self-combustion. It's basically an accelerant. Heating oxidizers can produce oxygen, which can lower the flash point of flammables and combustibles. Heating oxidizers can lead to large production of oxygen and steam, rapidly increasing the pressure of containers. And again, you would present the list of oxidizers used in your brewery. How do you protect yourself from the oxidizers in terms of its reactivity? Proper storage, avoid contamination by organics, metals, and other substances. Never add unused chemicals back to the original container. From its pressure, that generation of gas perspective, never put into a sealed container. Primary containers are self-venting in this particular case. Store in a cool, well-ventilated area to avoid buildup of fumes. Other hazards in our workplace, compressed gases. Compressed gas cylinders can fall over, shearing off the valve and creating a rocket. One of the most distressfully entertaining things that you can do is do a search of pictures and images of gas cylinder damage. It is catastrophic. It sends those things through walls, blows out big holes in floors. They really are dangerous. Rapid decompression of a compressed gas can create deadly explosive force. CO2 and N2 and argon are simple asphyxiates. So those are things that we have around our brewery that are in compressed gas bottles. Natural gas and propane obviously are flammable. Natural gas and propane are toxic if inhaled in sufficient quantities. Contact with liquefied gases will cause frostbite, and provide a list of the compressed gases in your brewery. So very consistent what we're presenting to our employees. How do we protect ourselves? Cylinders must always be chained securely and stored with a valve cover on. Explosive decompression. All vessels must be fitted with a pressure relief valve. Never fill a vessel beyond its pressure rating. How do we protect ourselves from compressed gases? Continued. Adequate ventilation in areas prone to the buildup of CO2. CO2 monitors in all areas where CO2 buildup is expected. Those can be expensive, so you do that judiciously as you can afford it in the areas that you know that are more prone to CO2 contamination. The presence of CO2 is detectable by smell, and we point that out to them that, I'll talk more about that in a bit. Inadequate oxygen creates hypoxia, which causes headaches, dizziness, and disorientation. So again, telling them, this is what you start to experience when you are exposed to CO2. In terms of the flammability hazards, flammable gases have a distinct rotten egg odor added to allow detection at very low concentration. Natural gas is odorless. They add that aroma. Frostbite, avoid contact with liquefied gases. We've seen that when the valve ices up and you can get your hands stuck to there. Or it can be very uncomfortable. Okay, so some additional hazards in our workplace. Dust hazards. Most granulated materials can create dust, which is an irritant. Long-term exposure to high levels of silica dust can cause silicosis and other respiratory diseases. Grain dust can be explosive. And present the list of the dust hazards in your brewery. How do we protect ourselves from these dust hazards? For irritant dust, avoid the generation of dust. How's that for a strategy? Try not to dump that DE violently into the dosing tank. Try not to generate the dust in the first place. Again, we'll touch upon that a little bit further in the discussion. As far as silicates at DE, testing by an industrial hygienist has shown that exposure levels during filtrations are not hazardous. This is in our brewery. So we actually had some testing done in our brewery where they came in and they put monitors on my employees and they went through standard operations of what they do, and there's personal exposure limits that OSHA sets. We were not above that exposure limit. Most of the time, that's a free service. So there are resources out there for you to get this testing done, things of this nature, noise testing, dust generation testing, etc. We do it through our workman's comp insurance provider. We just call them up. Yeah, it takes a few weeks to get it scheduled, but they come out, they'll do that for us for free and give us a complete report so we know what programs we have to have in place and which ones we're not compliant to have in place. It's important that if you're not required to have it, you probably don't want to have it, because a lot of these programs require a lot of monitoring and a lot of training. And if you don't need to have it, that's the ideal situation. Eliminate the hazard. Optional use of N95 HazMask respirator is allowed. So we provide that just for comfort for my employees. We make that point. You know, we don't need to have a respirator program. Those are highly intensive, but we do provide the mask if, you know, if that's something that makes you feel better or something perhaps that you'd like to have. Explosive dust, keep all grain handling areas clean, avoid dust generation, keep ignition sources away from grain handling areas. Again, I put this is not really part of our program per se, but I wanted to have this note in here for your benefit. Environmental testing will determine if you need a respirator program or a hearing protection program or any of those kinds of things, and I recommend you contact the people that you're insured by. If you don't have accidents, they make money, so they're more than willing to help. What are the hazards in our workplace? Organic solvents. Inhalation may cause intoxication. Woo. Respiratory damage and long-term nervous system damage. Ingestion may be harmful or fatal. Skin and eye contact may cause irritation, and they're flammable. Here's our list of ones that we use. We have isopropanol for pulling samples, et cetera, and sanitizing things. We have some lacquer thinner on site and inkjet dater fluids. So there's an example of how we list them. How do we protect ourselves from these hazards? Inhalation, use in a well-ventilated area, ingestion, avoid contact and ingestion, always wear safety glasses and gloves when handling, avoid ignition sources, store in a flammable liquids cabinet. All this information is coming from the SDS, by the way. So how do we protect ourselves from hazard? PPE. And I make sure to talk to people about PPE. It's, you know, how you use it and how you maintain it. So for us, safety glasses are required in all production areas all the time, period. Everyone that comes in, all of our tours, all of our visitors, all of our contractors, everybody comes in, they're wearing safety glasses. You would inspect for fit and condition. So at that point, I have a pair of glasses when I'm presenting this to someone and I show them the glasses, and we've all seen that. But I would talk about things like, you know, what's important about the glasses besides just wearing them is that they have to be usable. They're all scratched up, you know, you check them for scratches. If they're scratched up, what's the first thing that happens? They pull down the end of your nose, and you're protecting your nose, or it goes up on your forehead, and you're protecting your forehead with your personal eye protection. So you want to make sure if they're scratched, you can't see through them well, put them on. Get a new pair. Inspect for fit and condition. You know, how many times have you seen someone put a paper clip or something to replace the hinge on a pair of glasses or something like that. Those glasses not only there to protect you from a drop of chemical, which, by the way, defies all the laws of gravity when it splashes, goes up, bounces off the wall, comes around, does a loop-de-loop, goes around the side of your glasses, and goes right into your eye. I swear I've seen it happen. But they're also there for impact. And if they're not on your face properly, or if you have one arm hanging back here and the other one's just missing, chances are, you know, it's like wearing a helmet without the strap. You get one bounce. That's it, and then it's gone. So you want it to stay on your face so that if you're hit a couple times with something, it's still there to protect you. So I point that out to my employees. Say, you know, use your head. It's not just, you know, this, but there's some practical elements to how you do this. Face shield, use with undiluted chemicals. Again, stressing, if it's scratched up or if it's in poor repair, get a new one, replace it. Don't use something that's not adequate for the job. Boots, check for holes, and serviceability. And I point out, glass, broken glass is probably the biggest avenue by which you put a hole at a brewery in your boot, unless you're a canning brewery. But so I would say that to them. Again, you want to give them the benefit of your experience. You've been here working. You know, they're a new employee. They're coming in. You've got tidbits and insight into the hazards at your workplace that OSHA's not going to have, and that this new employee is not going to have. Give them the benefit of that experience. So glass, gloves, check for holes. Again, I say, you know, the easiest way to put a pair of hole in a pair of gloves is that, you know, using that TC clamp, you throw it on there, you clip it, you go to turn it, and suddenly you realize you got your glove. You know, that happens all the time, right? You get your glove tip in there, and you snap, and you pull it out. Next thing you know, you got a little hole. So I explained that to them. These are the things that can happen to gloves. You know, my 20 years, I've lost many pairs of gloves, and that's how I've done it. Rubber apron, check for holes and serviceability. Again, talking about what it's used for and what it, you know, it's got to have the straps. If it doesn't have the straps, what happens? You get hit by a chemical. Is it always a drop? Is it always a drop that floats around and goes like this and comes in? Sometimes a hose lets go and it's, you know, 20 gallons per minute coming out of this thing, 50 gallons per minute coming out of this thing. It's flopping around. You want to have that apron on strapped tightly. So make sure that you're giving them this information. N95 half mask provided for comfort only. I point out, you don't have to wear this. We've had the testing done. We are below the PEL, a personal exposure limit. And I just provide that for the varying levels of sensitivity people have. You know, maybe you have a cold or maybe you have asthma or something like that, so you're more susceptible to these certain things. So we provide that. So and I discuss the use, and again, when it's in red, it's not part of our program. It's just a note for myself. I discuss the use and inspection with all of these items and take them out and say, you know, here's how we damage these things. Here's where they're useful, et cetera, et cetera. Again, providing my personal experience whenever possible. Okay, so how do we detect hazards around our brewery? We discuss how to detect the presence of hazardous chemicals. Site, visible spills, chemical residue. I would take them to a spot and say, here it is. This is what it looks like. This white, crusty stuff is caustic residue, et cetera. The smell, what do things smell like? CO2 smells. Sounds of leaking pipes, alarms, dripping vessels, et cetera. Experience and identifying what is not normal. I take the time to explain this to them. Eventually, you know, they're new employees. They're clueless. They're in this new world where, you know, there's a whole new sights, sounds, and smells they're not familiar with. They don't really know what's normal. But they will, that will change over time, and I encourage them to think in those terms. You will learn what happens around here, and when you hear something that's out of the ordinary, go and look and see what it is. 9 times out of 10, you're going to do something great. You're going to help. You're going to save us some money. You're going to keep someone from getting injured or killed, or you're going to keep, you know, something from damaging our beer. So, again, I stress that with them. Learn what's normal, and when you hear something that's not normal or smell something or see something, check it out. And so after the written program, after I've done that, it's basically our program right there, again, the abridged version, but I take a tour of the facility together. I go through, we visit the first aid stations, and of course those SDS references we mentioned. I said, here's the book, here's how it's organized, et cetera, et cetera. We visit the chemical storage areas. I show the point of use containers that are around all the bright tanks. Again, making sure to give them the benefit of my experience. What are the hazards in a chemical storage area? Well, you don't put your hand on the top of the chemical drum because that little ring around the side oftentimes has raw chemicals sitting on the top of it. If there's a bucket turned over next to the drum, don't sit down on the bucket while you're filling up your point of use container because it could have drips on it and you could get up and you could lose a pair of pants and have some scarring on your tuchus. So we visit the chemical storage. I show those. Visit the eye wash stations and the chemical showers. I demonstrate their use. You know, when you get chemicals in your eyes, you can't see. And you're nervous and you're freaking out because all you're thinking of is, oh my gosh, I'm losing my eyes. And you're, you know, going around trying to find what's going on. You've got to be familiar with how that thing works. I encourage them to say, ask for help. If you got chemicals in your eye, you yell help so someone can get you to that station. Time matters in those situations. And I make sure that they know that and how the stuff operates. I demonstrate their use. And then I go to a spot. I find a CO2 spot. Geez, that's really easy in a brewery, isn't it? We go over to a fermentation vessel. I show them the bubbling blow-off pipe. I said, that's CO2. Well, you know, many times they know what CO2 is and how we get it. And then I say, smell it. Can you smell it? Yes. Can you? When I say feel it, we all know that feeling, that, you know, that heaviness that gets in your chest if you get a big dose of CO2. I point that out to them to make sure. It's like, this is what CO2 exposure feels like. Be aware of it. We have monitors, but safety monitors fail. Again, I stress, give them the benefit of your experience and knowledge. Very important. It says, you know, this is HAZCOM. This is not excitement. It's very difficult to get people excited and engaged, although I can see that you all are very excited and engaged about this. Give them the benefit of your experience. That's what makes it real. That's what makes it more interesting, and that's what makes it more relevant to the place that they're expected to work. So basically, that's how we do it right there. Boom. And there's that guy with his PPE. and thank you. And now I would entertain some questions, if you have some questions. This is my contact information. Hopefully you were listening. I should have mentioned you didn't have to take notes, because you can just call me on the phone and I will help you. I will send you my program. I will do whatever I need to do to make sure that this is as easy as possible for you, because it is fairly easy. It's not difficult. It takes a relatively small time commitment, and the benefits of it are far-reaching, and you will reap the benefits of it for the entirety that your brewery is in operation. So, questions? Sir.
My question is about, you went through all the testing so you didn't have to use respirators.
Correct.
Have you ever at any time had the respirator program where you had to do the testing on all the employees and all that kind of stuff?
I have not had that at all. I've read the program. It is very intense. There's a lot of training, a lot of documentation that has to happen that goes into it. We used to actually pass out HEPA filters and everything until our insurance company said, you don't need this. You want this out of here, because if you give your employee that, then you have to have a program whether or not you actually exceed the PEL or not. As soon as you start passing those things out, they have to know how to use them. So if you don't need them, I would say don't use them.
Because you have to go through, I mean, all the employees that use them have to have like medical testing on a regular basis, don't they?
Yes. Annual testing, all kinds of stuff that has to happen there. Yes, sir.
What was your all's plan or any sort of training for confined space?
Confined space? We have a confined space program. The first part of our confined space program is we don't get in confined spaces. So everything has to be marked. So all your confined spaces are marked. And we tell every employee, you don't get in there, period. Now, obviously, that's not practical. There are times we have to get into the tank, and we have a program in place for people who are authorized to decertify a confined space.
Okay, so is that a program that you call a safety consultant or get someone out to do that training for your staff, or is that something?
You can. There absolutely would be resources for that. And again, I would go to your workman's comp provider and start there.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of times, this stuff is free. They'll send out an industrial hygienist who will do all these things for you. You can get consultants, but the regulations are not that difficult to read and understand. And, you know, I'm no more intelligent than any of you people out there. And if I can get through it, you can get through it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
With the orientation for new employees, is there any kind of standard on, like, you know, recording that you did sit down? Do you have to have them,
yes,
like, sign off on anything? Okay. All right. Cool.
Absolutely. Document it. Put it in their employee file. And there's a test.
Yes.
So if I happen to work at a brewery where we are not very safe and we're trying to get that way,
yeah,
do you have any tips and tricks as to how to sort of shift and change the culture towards, this is dangerous, I should pay attention?
Yeah. We had that. That was, you know, that was probably perhaps one of my biggest challenges in the last few years, was to get that to happen. The first thing that I made sure was, I've always got them on. Demonstrate it. I've got my eye protection on. It's around my neck. I do not even walk through the door. From my truck, onto my face, into the brewery, get to my office where I don't have to wear them. But as soon as I walk out there, boom, you develop the habit. It's what it's all about. It's developing the habit. I don't, I come out of my office, there's a set of stairs. I walk right down the stairs. Suddenly that triggers, put on your eyewear, Joe. Enforcement is absolutely critical. You've got to make sure that and no one wants to do that. No one wants to be the heavy. No one wants to go out there and go to a guy who does a great job at what he does and, you know, in many instances is not paid the prevailing wage for, you know, whatever else is going on, right? Because we have great employees who are there for the love of the beer. And you've got to tell them, hey, man, you know, I need those. And they don't want to hear that, you know, because they're inconvenient to wear. They're typically uncomfortable. We work in a steamy, hot environment. They fog up and they're a pain in the butt. But you've got to, it's really all about demonstration and all about enforcement. You've got to say something. You can't just say, oh, I don't feel like dealing with it. You know, I yell at him every day about it and I hate doing it and I'm just not going to do it today because I don't feel like, you know, I want to avoid conflict today. You can't do that. You have to be on it. And if you've got a problem, you have to write them up. You have to discipline them if you consistently have a problem. That sends a clear signal. If you don't send a clear signal, then you don't get a clear response.
I'm the production manager at my brewery, and I take care of all of this, the safety and the orientation, and really making sure everything's going good. At what point in like the size of a brewery do you think it would be recommended to like actually get a safety manager in to take care of that? And so that's not like the production manager or you, vice president of operations who's doing it along with your other stuff. Get somebody who's dedicated nothing but safety.
That could vary, I think. I think I would say, we're all growing pretty quickly, right? Anyone here whose production's going down? Right, I figured nobody. So, it's best to be proactive on these things. I would say as soon as you can afford it.
All right.
Get someone in there. For me, I had this sort of standard, we're getting to the point now where we're going to have 100 employees. And I've had this thing in my head saying, that's my point. So I will be, for all you environmental safety folk out there, we'll be posting a job for 2015 for someone to come in and handle this. Because the job gets bigger and bigger the more people you have, and it gets difficult, and it takes a lot of time, and the enforcement takes consistent application of resources and time, and so there's a lot to be done. So,
any more questions then for Joe?
I just want to add on to that point. I used to run safety for our brewery, and now I manage all of our training. One of the other things to do, even if you don't have a dedicated full-time person for safety, have from each of the different teams, have them nominate a safety champion, someone who within either the brewing staff or the packaging staff, it's their responsibility, it's part of their, is to have that eye out, and it just kind of spreads the load and it creates a sense of ownership. We did that for a long time. It's how we built our safety committee, to have people look at it from that. This is one of your tasks, and look at it that way. And it takes that burden, buys you a little bit of time until you have the resources to have a dedicated person. And we haven't gotten rid of it. We still have that. But there's now a full-time person on top of that.
Yeah, fantastic. I was kind of hoping he was going to ask me a question that would allow me to segue right into that. And you did one better by even making a suggestion, so thank you. Yes, we have a safety committee. That is a great way to get engagement from your employees and have a program that they sustain. Our safety committee is responsible for the budget. We try to, you tell us what you guys need to make the place safe. It gives you a great avenue by which you can review your programs. Everyone's an expert in their particular area. They can review the near miss reports. You can develop policy and procedure based on those kinds of things. And I think most importantly, it creates that culture of safety right there. You have someone from every department. Your employees are responsible for it. They are engaged. It's a great way to go. And I think it's all a great part of that craft brew spirit. We're entrepreneurs. We are self-reliant. We're tough guys. We're gonna own it. It's ownership thinking, exactly that. So thank you. Great idea.
So there's a whole variety of different types of PPE that everybody wears. Safety glasses, goggles, face shields, the whole gamut. But there's also footwear, which can be a little more personal because you have people that have, all kinds of different sizes of feet. If you have a standard boot that's maybe really cheap for the company to provide, it is awful for a particular employee. They maybe have to get something custom or whatever. Can you speak a little bit towards, Wellington's versus, just whatever's available on the market that might be just those safety toe, steel toe, and then how, trying to balance between this is a very personal piece of protective equipment that, somebody has ownership. No one else can wear this boot versus a company's having to pay for the whole thing.
Right.
How do you balance that?
For one thing, if we require something's use, you have to provide it at some level. So the eyewear, we pay for the eyewear. But in terms of boots, obviously going through the SDSs, they're all going to say the same thing. You got to have chemical-resistant boots. So all the production employees at Left Hand have to wear those boots when they're on the production floor. We also have policies in place about steel-toe boots. And because of that, because we require steel-toe boots, even if you're not, say, in production or bottling or doing a cellar operation, maybe you're in the cooler moving kegs or cases or something like that, that you're required to wear steel-toe boots. And by virtue of that, what we offer is a stipend to our employees. So we'll annually, we'll reimburse them up to $50 for a pair of boots, which I feel is a pretty good number. I'm a boot guy. I love boots. I'm wearing boots now. I'll be wearing boots tomorrow. And I love my steel-toe boots. And so I've bought cheapies, you know, and so for that $50 a year, you can get a pair of boots from, you know, Walmart or something like that. That'll probably last you about a year before they start falling apart. So we kind of cover that expense. You can reach out to companies like, you know, Red Wing. That'll give you discounts if you agree to, you know, to say, you know, go over to Red Wing, you get a discount, and, you know, they provide your boots. So they'll work with you on those kinds of things. That's what I've started buying. So I take that $50 and I get a $50 towards my Red Wings, and they run me $150, $200. They last me 4 or 5 years. I just bought my second pair, and so I asked the guy, how long do these last? And he said, you bought these 4.5 years ago. And so, again, kept it right there. And those are a better pair of boots. You know, good footwear, we all know, is important. It makes your feet feel better. A cheap pair of shoes is exactly that. It's a cheap pair of shoes. But the $50 stipend seems to work pretty well for us. So I think it's a fair number. It's about cost you, say, $50 a year to be in boots at some level. You know, for the work boots, the steel-toe work boots. Anything else? We do the same thing with eyewear. If you have prescription eyewear, we will offer a stipend on that because, you know, having those two on is really a pain. And again, you want to encourage them. Let them, you know, I absolutely let them pick the PPE they want, so you can provide them with a bunch of solutions for eyewear. Say, here are all the ones that you can choose from. Everyone's face is different. Your nose is different. You know, we set the standard that they have to be wraparound and impact resistant, et cetera. But beyond that, you know, pick the ones that make you feel, if they feel good, they'll wear it. If they're uncomfortable, they won't. They will not want to. And of course, you tell them that they have to wear those things. So. Any others?
Well, if there are no more questions, tell them you can stick around for a couple minutes.
Absolutely. Okay. And there's my stuff. So by all means, don't be shy. Call.